Welcome to an all-new episode of The McFuture. I'm Steve Factor, and today my guest is someone who needs no introduction. So he will not get one. Just kidding. My guest today is the Larry King. Now, as you know, I've been obsessed with the future. More accurately, its sloppy, retarded cousin, the McFuture. The future promises us flying cars and 200-year lifespans and Neo from the Matrix. The McFuture gives us surge pricing, 35% insurance hikes, and Donald J. Trump. So in this muck, it's pretty easy to lose sight of what really matters. And who better to help calibrate my compass than a guy who spent 60 years, can you imagine that, 60 years interviewing some of the most accomplished people on the planet, Larry King. Larry and I confront God, aliens, and most important, this fleeting idea of legacy. At 83, Larry King is as sharp and charming as ever. I could immediately see why it's nearly impossible not to marry the guy. And at Larry's age, I'd be in Florida thanking erectile dysfunction for a merciful rest. Larry's out starting new ventures. He's a star and 20% owner of Aura.tv. It's a digital media startup funded by Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim, a man who will someday fund my media empire or adopt me. Now, you'd think Larry could spend the rest of his days pretty much just wandering from mansion to mansion, raiding the fridge and napping poolside. So why the hell is he still working? What drives the guy? I think a lot has to do with his rough childhood.
I was born in the rough section of called East New York. It was the neighborhood of Mike Tyson. My father owned a little barn grill, which he later sold. And then a tragic day on June 9th, 1943, I was 9.5 years old. He died suddenly of a heart attack. And that changed my whole world. We moved to Bensonhurst with a single mother and a younger brother. And I was the poorest kid in my neighborhood. We lived in the attic apartment. For the first 2 years, we were on relief. So New York City bought my first pair of glasses. I never forgot what it was like to be poor. When I hear people condemn welfare recipients, it makes me sick because I know what it's like. And I appreciated so much the city of New York, which took care of me and my mother until she could go to work.
So even though Larry lost interest in school after his dad died, he never doubted what he wanted to be.
So I had this passion. I wanted to be a broadcaster when I was 5 years old. I don't know why, but I would listen to the radio and imitate what I heard on the radio. I'd run into the bathroom after a show and I would go, "A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense." When I was in my young teens, I'd go up to radio stations and pretend that I worked there. And I would get into the elevator and pretend I was an announcer. "First floor, please."
He'd go to radio stations and pretend he worked there, as I do now at Tesla. And by the way, Elon Musk is much stronger than he looks. But I'll be back, Mia Moore. I'll be back. Larry's insatiable lust to broadcast at any station, sports, talk, local TV, opened a series of doors. It made Larry the man Clintons, Bushes, Trumps, and Putins could curl up with.
To me, that I've been blessed to have all these years of being paid to ask questions of 95% of the people of accomplishment, that I've been able to sit on a plane with them, the same equal plane playing field, and I'm the one that's the interlocutor. What a freaking break that is.
I realize Larry's lust isn't just for broadcasting, but for life itself. And I guarantee you that he loves life way more than you or I ever will. How do I know that? Larry plans to be cryogenically frozen when he dies. In a way, he's making this ultimate bet on the future, that there is one for him and for us.
I don't want to die. I love living. I love being curious. Like if I died, who's going to win the World Series? Who's going to be the next president? Would drive me nuts.
Now, his decision isn't all that irrational because it's rooted in this one simple belief that this is it.
I don't believe in an afterlife. I'm not religious. I'm probably an atheist. All atheists say they're agnostic. It's like a cop-out. I'm an atheist. I don't believe in a God. And I don't believe, if there is a God, he's a failure.
But Larry's not entirely without otherworldly beliefs. I asked him about all those shows he did about aliens and UFOs.
I think it's pompous to think that we're the only living things. I've interviewed astronauts and they told me, you know, when they're circling, the only thing blue is the Earth. But I believe that if there's this universe, there's other universes, to say we are the only would be ridiculous. What amazes me about UFOs is how come they never land in New York City
exactly.
or Washington, D.C.? They land in a suburb of Casper, Wyoming.
You know, as I listen to Larry talk, he speaks with this ease and freedom of a man completely unconcerned about offending bosses or making the rent. Though that might not be entirely true. He did confess something about his cryogenic investment.
My one thing against doing it is that it takes some of the money that I would have given to the family away. So it costs about $250,000 and it is upkeep every year. And I don't want to take away from my children.
So besides his passion for life and broadcasting, I finally got to the bottom of what keeps Larry going. The high cost of refrigeration. And it's not like Larry's family didn't try to talk him out of it.
And then my wife said to me, she says, you're not going to know anybody. I said, I'll make new friends. I'm adaptable.
So projecting my fear onto Larry, I asked him, aren't you worried you'll wake up in Idiocracy with President Northwest, Kim and Kanye's daughter, presiding over a world of virtual zombies?
I'd rather be alive. Dead is so final. That keeps me going. I want to meet people. So if I woke up in that situation, I'd interview zombies. I'd interview the head of whoever was running it. How did this come to this?
It was pretty clear to me Larry was not banking on being remembered in some distant future. He plans to be there. So what does Larry think of his legacy or legacy in general? I came to terms with my own legacy, that I won't have one. I will not be remembered. And probably neither will you. How do I know that? Because Steve Jobs will not be remembered. Go ahead and name the inventors of the A-Track, the Walkman, air conditioning, refrigeration, flat screen TVs. You can't. Yeah, they're on Wikipedia somewhere. But at this point, no one under 10 knows or cares about Steve Jobs, or even worse, Steve Factor. Larry felt the same.
William Shatner said to me, it's probably true. We're all going to be forgotten. It's just part of the game. You know, you hope that in the books you leave a legacy. I hope that I've entertained and informed people. But Shatner said, hey, in today's world of eat 'em up, spit it out, here today, gone tomorrow, forget it. You had your place on Earth. You were lucky enough to live a long time, which is lucky too. I interviewed Steve Jobs when he started Apple. And he goes at an early age. Will he be forgotten? He'll be remembered in the next decade, of course, but as things revolutionize and we travel by light, space of light, who knows? Yeah, Shatner made me depressed over that. Look, Arthur Godfrey once accounted for 33% of the CBS income. He was the most dominant figure in American broadcasting. No one talks about him.
Okay, by now I'm pretty sure I was bumming Larry out. I had time to ask about one last legacy before Larry choked me out with his suspenders. Ted Turner.
I think Ted was the greatest broadcasting figure of the second half of the 20th century. Sarnoff was probably the greatest in the first half. Ted had that absence of ego, always told the truth, put confidence in the people who worked for him, and just was loyal to the core. I never worked for anyone better. The mark he's made has been tremendous. Ted was, in a sense, an off-the-wall creative genius. I mean, he didn't send out market ideas. You know how he got the whole idea for CNN? He's driving in his car one day, and he turns on the radio, and the announcer says, this is GST, all news all the time. And all he said to himself is, why couldn't that work on cable? He didn't test market it. He didn't send out flyers. He started CNN.
So shortly after birthing this idea for a 24-hour news network, Ted brought Larry to the masses. He made him a global household name. So it's understandable why Larry felt guilty when this happened.
The only thing I felt weird about was, in 2010, I got a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Emmys. I was very honored, and I went to New York, and Brian Williams was the MC, and all the network anchors were there, and it was a great night for me. 5 years later, in 2015, I inducted Ted Turner into the Hall of Fame Lifetime Achievement of the Emmys. That I would get it 5 years before him, as I said when I introduced him, was ridiculous. He should have been the first cable person ever honored by the Emmys.
Well, you know, you are a beloved figure. He was a very divisive figure who needed to be divisive because he had to break a lot of eggs to make the omelet.
Yeah, he did. He had his enemies. But there was no one like him.
Larry is still living the dream. My dream of working with one brilliant billionaire, Ted Turner, then moving on to an even richer one, Carlos Slim. I fear that only Larry or Melania could pull this off.
What I'm doing now, Steve, is living out a dream. When I was a kid, I dreamt of being on the radio. I never would have dreamt that I'd have the first national radio talk show, or that I'd break in at CNN and be seen all over the world, or that I'd now have an internet show that's starting its fifth year, that I have a partner like Carlos Slim. I say this and people don't believe it. I pinch myself every day. I can't believe all the things that have happened to me. Now, I know I have talent. I know I was good at what I did. I know I was a good, I'm a good broadcaster. I know pace. I know timing. I know sense of humor. I know how to ask questions. I know I have an insatiable curiosity. But I still pinch myself because you always needed breaks. It's a subjective business. I needed that radio station in Miami that was willing to hire me with no experience. I needed the Mutual Network that said we can do a national talk show, which was unheard of. I needed Ted Turner to like me. If he didn't like me, I wouldn't have had CNN.
And after a career first, the Larry singularity is upon us. At Aura.tv, Larry's new show, which streams online, already has 3 Emmy nominations. But Larry couldn't care less about the technology behind it.
I still do what I've always done, but the means of transmission is different. But I'm still amazed that I know nothing technical, by the way. You know, CNN has seen we get beamed up 23,000 miles and shot around the world. How to explain that to Jefferson? I don't know how it all works. I don't know where the internet is.
Now, I would have laughed harder at that if I hadn't just spent 2 hours researching podcast audio compression. Seriously, I need an intern. If you know what you're doing, give me a call. Larry is freer than ever on Aura.
One, I own 20% of the company. 2, I don't have any suits that I have to deal with.
The only thing he misses is being live.
CNN was live, and I love live. We do all of our shows taped, Politicking and Larry King Now. But I know it's taped, so once it starts, I still treat it as live. I love the fact that when that light went on, radio or TV, you were on.
Now, I couldn't let Larry go without asking for his advice for the next generation or anyone starting in media today.
You can't make people like you, so be yourself. You can't lie your way into making it. And if you want to last, you could make it maybe for a brief time, getting away with stuff. And if you want longevity, be honest with yourself. If you can be that way, you don't have to remember anything. It just works in life. But in broadcasting, it really works. Because this is a wonderful industry. It's so creative. It's so there. There's still room for anybody to make it. Don't be afraid to be yourself.
Now, I have to admit, it seemed a little simplistic when he said it, but then the more I thought about it, the more I realized some of life's biggest truths often are. Then we talked about some of the people that live their life this way. The first one that came to mind for me was Joan Rivers.
Joan Rivers was that way. Absolutely, Joan Rivers is that way. Johnny Carson was certainly himself. Now, the real Johnny Carson was very shy, didn't mix well with people, but he never, when he came on, he never hid the fact about his marriages. He was self-deprecating. It worked because he was him. Politicians who are themselves grow on people and work. Obama's a classic example. Started off poorly, and now Obama is being liked more every day. You know why? We like him. You know why we like him? Because he comes to us as a regular guy.
Is there anyone else in politics living by that credo? Who is genuine?
Well, independent candidates are more genuine because they have to be. In a two-party system, what you create is a lot of people who say what they think the public wants to hear. But under the independent system, Ross Perot never worried about what you think about what he said. He said what he felt. Now, sometimes with Donald Trump, for example, people are afraid of what he felt. That's okay if he's himself, if that's the truth. We don't know if he's telling the truth. I mean, I know Donald a long time. Now, the Donald I knew was always pro-choice, always favored a single-payer system, endorsed Hillary Clinton when she ran for the Senate. So I don't know if that's the real Donald I'm seeing now.
What do you think happened? You think it's pure opportunism?
It looks that way. He found a wedge to go into that with all those other candidates, all of whom had weaknesses, and to take the ball and run with it. And I think initially he was surprised. He would call me on the phone sometimes and say, do you believe this? hey, he got it fair and square.
When I finally got to asking about Larry's hope for the future, he didn't hesitate for a second.
Oh, that's easy. I would like to see both of my kids in the major leagues. I'm a baseball freak, and they're both very good, 117, 116. They're very good players. That would be my one wish, to sit at Dodger Stadium and watch Chance and Cannon King play Major League Baseball.
Maybe legacy really is that simple and attainable by all of us. No one will remember our podcasts or iPads or PowerPoints. Historians aren't going to debate our big decisions, venti or grande. And decades from now, children won't dress up like us. Okay, maybe Lady Gaga or Cher, but not like the rest of us. We bought our shit at the Gap. The one legacy that's inalienable is our power to birth and teach future generations, to pass along our wisdom, to set them up to succeed. Maybe we could leave them a few fish in the ocean, or maybe one of those big, white, hairy, growly things. I mean polar bears, not Alec Baldwin. And when we do all that, Larry will be right there with us. He might be slightly cold to the touch, but as warm and lovable as ever on the inside. Just don't tell the zombies. Check out Larry's show at aura.tv. Don't forget to log in at ideafactory.com. There I have a bonus episode with Larry, some of the backstory and his early years. I think you'll love it. Check it out and subscribe to the McFuture podcast and tell a friend. I'm Steve Factor. See you next week on the McFuture.